Well, welcome to another edition of My Life in Football, and of course here in Series 4. Really pleased to say that joining me today is probably one of the best left backs in non-league football, without a shadow of a doubt, Mr. Lane Edie. How are you, sir?
Morning, mate. How are you? I'm all right, thank you.
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. So, been a bit of time since I've seen you, mate, face to face. I mean, but so how's life treating you?
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. Getting on a little bit now in the football world, but no, life's good. I can't complain. Can't complain at all.
You still got all your goals on a, on a back catalogue somewhere that you're seeing from played on TV.
Every now and then it pops up on on memories and what have you on my phone. And yeah, I think the other week was the Worthing one that you recorded. And yeah, no, it's there's some good memories in there.
So you're at the minute you're at Welwyn Garden City. We'll come back to more stories about that later on when alongside Mr. Webbers and as well. So I mean, enjoying your football still?
Yeah, no, it's I've always said the moment you stop enjoying it is the moment you don't, you shouldn't probably do it anymore. And that's one thing I definitely am doing at the moment. I am enjoying it. It's important to be around good people. It's important to be around like-minded people as well, in the sense of how they see the game and their visions and ambitions and that sort of stuff. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it at the moment.
So, with this crazy world of non-league football and football in general, I mean, how did it all start for you then? Was that basically school-wise, was it, or outside of school?
It was probably way before that, to be honest. I think my old man took me down to Richmond Park in southwest London, where it's probably about half an hour from where we lived at the time. And I think I was in a West Ham kit. To my annoyance, now he shows me the photo every now and then. And yeah, we just started. I think that's my first ever memory of playing football. It must have been. And again, I don't actually remember it because it was. I see the photo all the time and that sort of the home video stuff. But I must have been maybe three and a half, four, something like that. And that's probably where it really started. But my family have been involved in football for ever since they can remember and ever since I can remember. So it's definitely embedded within the family. But I guess where I started taking a real keen interest in it, if you like, was probably school with my mates and going down the park and jumpers for goalposts kind of stuff.
So, I mean, school side, though, I mean, did you get into the school team or was it one of those
Yeah,
turning up and
yeah,
getting
yeah,
in?
yeah. So I played for every school I was in. Played for the school team as much as I could. District, county, yeah, the sort of the normal route that you would see from probably most people. But yeah, no, I just loved it. I couldn't get enough of it, to be honest. I wanted to play every day.
So, what was that like getting into your school team and starting to play some sort of like proper games of football rather than just as you said, jumpers for goalposts. I mean, what was that feeling a bit like?
It's a different pressure, isn't it, really? I think that's probably the only difference. You get a little bit until you get kind of used to it, I guess. You're a little bit more nervous, a little bit more anxious about it. You're not sure what really to expect. But I mean, as a kid, I just loved it. Like I said a minute ago, I couldn't get enough of it. I just wanted to play football. I didn't really until probably I got to maybe sort of like a 15, 16-year old. I didn't really appreciate the excitement that I would get from playing a competitive game, and probably the nerves that you get from playing a competitive game, like bragging rights against local schools and playing against people from your school but play for a different team on like Sunday mornings and what have you. Just the normal sort of banter you would get as kids, I guess. Yeah, you don't really realize how good that is and how the feel, like just how the camaraderie works at school and your friendships get closer and what have you until probably later on in life. But yeah, I mean, I loved it. I tried to grasp it as much as I could.
Back then, I mean, was it a case of you get told by the teacher you're in the team, or was it, in my day, you used to have to run down the gym and there was a piece of paper on the wall saying who was in the team and who weren't?
Exactly that. So yeah, in the PE hall, in sort of the corridor between the change rooms and the hall, there was lists of who's in the team and who's in the squad and what have you. And yeah, that's how you checked. It wasn't a teacher coming up to you and saying, yeah, you're in, you're not, whatever. It was literally a piece of paper.
What was that like, though, going down there as a kid, running down there? Just the excitement must have been bigger than actually seeing your name anyway. It just that build up,
Yeah, probably.
or
I
it's
mean,
like that carry on.
the first couple of times were you don't really know what to expect. I mean, as sort of, if you think about like secondary school, for example, like if you're 11 year old, it's your first sort of step into, at that time, it was 11-a-side football. So, first sort of year in 11-a-side football, you don't really know what you're kind of doing. The pitch is bigger. There's obviously more players, more sort of tactical work you need to do, and that sort of stuff. You don't know how you're going to pick it up. But then I was quite fortunate that as my time went through school, it was, I was playing more than I wasn't. So it was more of a surprise when I wasn't in the squad, but that's for other reasons. That's for boys being boys.
You was playing at school, but I mean, when you was playing at school, was school your first team, or was you sort of playing for a team on a Saturday, Sunday, prior to that?
Yeah, no, I was playing for a team on a Saturday, just local teams, local village teams, just wherever we lived, basically. We moved around a couple of times, family-wise. So, yeah, the played for a few sort of Sunday teams and what have you, and then it kind of transferred into school and sort of professional clubs and that sort of stuff. But yeah, no, school was school and Sunday league. They were probably hand in hand, to be honest. I used to play on a Saturday morning for the school and then Sunday mornings for the local teams.
So what was that like playing in a, for local sides? Because as you said, you probably weren't playing with the same people you were playing with at school because you're moving around and stuff. I mean, can you remember one of your first games playing for outside of school and maybe in school?
The first team I played for was pretty much the school team. So it wasn't too similar. It was pretty much almost spent all weekend together because it would play for school, and then a few of us would go watch our dads play for their team on a Saturday afternoon, and then it'd pretty much be the same, but just in reverse on Sunday mornings. We'd all play, and then we'd all go play in the park. Literally straight after, we wouldn't take our kit off, kind of thing. But then as I kind of moved around, it got a little bit sort of further afield, if you like, where I was playing. So it was, yeah, it was a little bit different. You come up against different challenges, you come up against different styles of teams. And I mean, just going into sort of Bedford and Luton and Milton Keynes and what have you, that there's different challenges to the teams you're playing against, right? It's just that level of competitiveness that you get from the areas, I guess, the demographic of the areas that you're playing for and the teams you're playing against.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, with it all though, I mean, how, just give me 2 seconds, mate. Sorry, mate. There's somebody at the door. Give me 2 seconds.
No worries. Yeah, all right.
Sorry. But I mean, with with that, I mean, can you remember any sort of games that you were playing in that sort of stick to mind? Some of your earlier games?
Not really, not like sort of the league games. No, I remember one County Cup final we got to, and we played a team that they're probably quite a well-known team, certainly in the area that I live now, but they're called St. Joe's. They're a team in Luton. They go all the way to adult football, and they were always very physical. They were always very sort of aggressive in the way they played football, not in the manner that they played, but just in the style of football that they wanted to impose on their opposition. But they'd beaten us, I think, three times that year. So both league games, and then I think we must have played them another cup. And I always remember my dad was the manager at the time, and I always remember him saying, "Look, this is going to be probably the toughest game we've ever played. Don't worry about all the other results and that sort of stuff." And really trying to sort of gee us up and get us ready for, I guess it's quite cliche, but a battle, right? A war, because that was the type of football they wanted, and we weren't that type of team. We were quite, I mean, you obviously know me pretty well. I'm not 6 foot 4. I'm not 6 foot wide. I never have been, and I never will be. But so it was a completely different style of game and sort of what to expect. And that was probably my first memory in the sense of, right, this is sort of real competitive football. I have to adapt my game sometimes to the opposition, and likewise they'll do the same to you. But yeah, I mean, on paper they finished, I think, probably two or three places ahead of us in the league, and we probably shouldn't have won that game, and I don't think we actually did, but we got it into extra time and penalties, and that was, I mean, we was sort of real underdogs that day. And that was probably the first game where I noticed, actually, do you know what? Success can happen no matter what level, ability, who you're playing against. It's a game of football at the end of the day. It's 11 versus 11 most as it starts, and then it's may the best people win kind of thing. But yeah, that was probably the real sort of eye-opening moment that I remember as a kid, to go in, actually, do you know what? It doesn't actually matter if they've beaten us before. It doesn't matter if they've beaten us or we've beaten them. We can still win this game. And having that sort of mentality, I guess, the winning mentality to sort of overcome the challenge.
And I'll go into a bit more because I'm sure he was involved in the very first nightmare playoff sort of run for Harlow at Witham. I'm sure he was,
Yeah.
and you know, so that sort of comes back to haunt you, that stat. We'll go into that stat a bit later
Yeah,
on. It does.
a little bit, just in reverse, eh?
But with that, you're in school. I mean, when did you start sort of like thinking, hang on, this could be something that could be a bit of a side career for me now, and I'm good enough to start playing in it. I mean, was that sort of a conversation you had with dad, and dad was saying you're good enough to do this?
Probably. I mean, I don't think any kid at some point doesn't believe that and doesn't want to do that. But I think it was probably when I was maybe 13, 14, I really sort of had a few trials and that sort of stuff. I went to Luton and then Stevenage, and for a few, both of them for a couple of years each, and a few years each. And that was probably when I really sort of noticed that, do you know what? I could get something out of it. I never in my mind, look, my family are quite grounded, right? So they always wanted me to do well in school. They always want me to have sort of a backup, if you like, because I think they're quite realistic. It's one in a million, right? That make it. This is very small percentage. So, whilst, don't get me wrong, it was always a dream. It was always something I wanted to do. It was always something that I've wanted to have some sort of career out of, whether that was just playing with mates on a Sunday afternoon for the rest of my life, or it was what's happened, or it could have been better, right? It was probably around sort of 13, 14, 15, something around there, where I thought, do you know what? I actually love doing this, and this is something that I can see myself doing for a long time.
So, I mean, when did you get to the stadium through those sort of like pro clubs and stuff? And when was it a case of sort of maybe then start getting to the stadium, joining that sort of first, you know, sort of a club, either non-league or pro club? When was that? When was the first?
It's probably 16, 15, 16 years old. That was when I probably started playing sort of men's football, if you like, where it sort of transitioned from your really nice sort of cuddly, fluffy pillow type football to actually you've got men shouting at you, you need, or sort of coaches being really sort of tactical with you, if that makes sense. Certainly back in them days, anyway, it's probably a little bit different now, but. Yeah, I mean, it was probably around 15, 16, something like that, where the sort of the switch flipped, where it became a little bit more, right, we need to win rather than, oh, it doesn't matter, we just need to play and get better. But it became at that intense sort of mentality that you need to win this game of football.
What was your first side in that run then, lad?
So I was at Luton at the time, but my dad managed again a local side. It was an adult football team this time, and I just went and played a few games for him. Just sort of, I think it was at the start of the season or the end of one season when my season had finished or not begun yet. And yeah, I mean, they were all men. I must have been 15 at the time, and yeah, it was. I don't want to say pub football because it wasn't. It was better than that, but it wasn't quite non-league football, if that meant it. It was probably maybe step 8 or 9 of the pyramid, something like that. So it was still, the people were still trying to fight for something, and clubs are still trying to do stuff, but it wasn't at a level where it was sort of do or die kind of thing. So you kind of eased yourself in, and everyone had a beer after, which was surprising to me at 15 years old. But yeah, that was probably the first exposure to, if you lose the ball, someone shouting at you kind of thing, rather than a, oh, don't worry, do it again, or try again, sorry.
You start getting a love for that side of football, though. I mean, because although you still, you say he was at Luton as well. I mean, how long was you at Luton for?
I think it was 3 or 4 years in the end, maybe 3 years. Yeah, something like that. I think it was about 3 years in the end. Yeah, it's two completely different worlds, isn't it? It's one was very, as I sort of said a minute ago, one was very technical and very tactical. One was very much, I don't care how you do it, you need to go and win the game. Get the ball as far away from our goal as possible, but get as close to their goal as possible, preferably in it. That was the difference. There was real, look, at the end of the day, as much as my dad was a very, very good coach and he helped me get to where I got to now, there's sort of a different level between a pro club and a, it's main, probably mainly the players, right? And the ability of the players and what you're able to share with them. But the level and the difference in sort of the tactical side and maybe the messages going across had to be completely different. One was talking to a group of men and 1 15-year-old, and one was talking to a load of 15-year-olds. So the messages are completely different. The language used is completely different. But yeah, no, I wouldn't, honestly, I wouldn't change that exposure for anything, to be honest. It grounded me. It made me realize that there's two sides to football, if you like. And it allowed me to, I guess, get that experience really early on, which I'd like to think in my early, so my late teens, my early 20s stood me in really good stead for where I was as a youngster.
I mean, any favourite games when you were at Luton that you can remember as a kid?
And Tottenham once, that was always quite nice, like, because being an Arsenal fan, that was always that was always nice ones to get over. Remember we I think we played in a school in St Albans. We was obviously away, and yeah, I just remember beating them 2-1, and that was always quite nice. That feeling, just to as a don't get it very often where you play the team of your the team you support's enemies. So yeah, that was probably my first one. I don't remember too much about sort of individual games, but like I say, the special ones are probably them.
It's boring beating them now, though, doesn't
It's too
it?
easy now, isn't it?
But I mean, with that, though, I mean, you was with your dad. So, what was your dad's team called?
So we had a couple. So we started when he was coaching me as a youngster, when we were just all kids and it was all my schoolmates, played for a local team called Harpenden Colts, based just sort of outside of St Albans in Harpenden. And then my dad took over a team in Leighton Buzzard,
Right.
and they were called Leighton Town, Leighton United, sorry, Leighton United. And that progressed again. He started with sort of schoolmates and that sort of stuff at the school level, and then he took over their first team, who again played in that sort of middle ground of non-league football. And yeah, that was obviously that was him. And then he decided just to follow me around the country instead of carrying on with him. He kind of had an ultimatum when he was when I got to an age where my career went off in a different direction to where his was, and mum and dad decided to follow me around the country for a few years.
So they started following you. Where was the first place they followed you to?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you. They literally come to every single game. It was probably
I mean, when I say that, I mean, what was the club, that first club that they followed you
right.
to?
It's probably St Neots. I played for St Neots for a few months. And yeah, it probably would have been that we was in the Southern Div 1, so something similar to where Welling are now, that sort of level of football. I can't remember, it might have been the Isthmian side as well. I can't remember what league it was. But yeah, I mean, you're looking at places like Marlow, you're looking at places like Ashford in Kent. Not in Kent, in Middlesex, sorry. It was that type of level, and I always remember the away games were always around there. But again, we're going back like 16 years ago now. Again, I was really, really young at that point.
So he was down at St. Neots. Where did you go from St. Neots?
St Albans, went
St.
back to
Albans.
St Albans. Yeah. So I went from St Albans to St Neots, and then back to St Albans. But the first time I was at St Albans, I didn't really play a lot. I was 16 maybe, maybe a little bit older. Yeah, I weren't. I was still really young. I weren't playing at all. It was more academy football still, or just like the back end of academy football into sort of reserve teams and that sort of stuff. But certainly, this was where I really sort of started playing first team football, like non-league first team football. And then, yeah, I went back to St Albans, and then that's where I guess my sort of non-league career just sort of continued. And that was probably the first team where I pretty much played as much as sort of a 17, 18-year-old would.
Any sort of memories that's come to mind from playing there?
Again, we won the County Cup that the first year I was there. We beat Bishop Stortford on penalties. One of my best mates was in goal, Bishop Stortford. So that was quite fun. I keep telling that to the day, to today. Yeah, there's a few, right? We went down to Truro and beat them. That's always nice. It's like a 12-hour, 18-hour
Yeah, I was
day.
gonna say, yeah, what's that like? What's that journey like?
The first time I did it was horrible. I left my house at 5 a.m. for a football game at 3 p.m. Got home at 2 a.m. the next morning. That sort of stuff, right? It's not nice. I've done it a few times, but I always joke you can probably get to America quicker than you get to Truro.
So what was that? What was the, as a player? You've done a few of them. I've been on a coach of you guys when you've gone down to Lewis and that sort of part. You know, what is that actually like as a player to try and get your head around the fact that you've got a football match at 3 o'clock or a football match at 7:45? Because I speak to a club quite regularly down in Cornwall called Mousel, and you know, and they're traveling. You know, I think their travel this year is over 8,000 miles. You know,
Jesus.
just to play league games. You know, and they come up to play Thatcham Town and Didcot. Do you know what I mean? Deeply dark is Cornwall. There is no other club further, you know, without falling off the edge of the country. So it's that must be her, you know, difficult to be able to play football at the end of it.
It is. I mean, if you think about it, if I leave my house at five, it's 10 hours before you're kicking off. It's not great. You've got to factor in it sounds really sort of privileged, right? But you've got to factor in sort of fluids. So you've got to drink enough. You've got to hydrate yourself. You've got to eat the right foods. You've got to, and I appreciate it's very easy to say when you're sitting on a really nice coach. But it is, you can't sit down for too long. You get stiff, that sort of stuff. It's really, you, at the same time, probably most people try and sleep as well. Because if you're up at 5 o'clock, it's a very early start. So, it is difficult. You can feel a little bit leggy. We like to, I mean, the times that when we've just Truro, for example, we've stopped twice. So I've done twice when we've drove down on the day, and I've done a stayover as well. The stayover, so much better. So much better going down on the Friday night. You just get down there. You don't need to stop, stretch your legs, that sort of stuff. You just get to the hotel, and then sort of have dinner, and you're sort of away, and then it's maybe only sort of 45 minutes an hour to the ground on the Saturday morning rather than 10 hours, or the best part of. But when you drive down there, you've got to stop a couple of times, make sure we're stretching our legs. That, like, if you're sitting on a coach for the best part of six, 7 hours, it's not ideal when you get off at 12 o'clock and you've got to sort of run around for an hour and a half, 2 hours. You
So
can feel
I
quite
always
leggy.
see, yeah, I always see that if you get a game like that, and then nine times out of ten, if you're playing, if it's St Albans, if it's Harlow, if it was Enfield or whoever playing Truro, and then you find that it's sort of like scheduled in for something stupid like end of November or end of January, and just leave off. If it just gets called off, I've got to do the same journey, but it's going to be a 7:45 kickoff on a Tuesday night.
You don't
I'm
get back
going to
until
get back
5 a.m. in the
about, yeah, I'm
morning.
going to get back about midday the following day, like.
It's horrible.
That's horrendous.
That's my bugbear with the leagues, right? I mean, we've had, I mean, even this year we've had, I think, four called off. But we had, at the start of the season, we had, well, from my other side, I weren't here at the start of the season, but that they played Saturday, Tuesday 1 week, and then it was just Saturdays. But I don't know why they don't stack the top end of the season, because at this level, well, most levels in non-league, you're going to have three or four called off a season. And for the last sort of 5 weeks, we've been playing Saturday, Tuesday. Maybe not 5 weeks. Last month, we played Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday. So it doesn't make sense. And going back to sort of the Truro one, I don't know why they don't just put it at the start of the season or right at the end of the season when you've got little to no chance of it being called off.
Yeah, crazy. I
Yeah.
mean, so you travelled down there with St Albans. And I mean, what was it? Must be even worse if you lose. I mean, what
We
happened?
did. We got tonked the first time. That was fun. We lost 3-0. It was one of them games where we all got off the bus and it was chucking it down with rain. It must have been about 4 degrees, and it like there was no heating in the changing room. It was dark, no electricity. That like it was just that they just made it a proper horrible place to go. And yeah, they just ran through us. But they were by far the better team that day, and it was probably one of the coldest days in terms of for the whole thing, from the journey to the game to the actual weather. It was probably one of the darkest days in football. You just couldn't get going. And I think that was one of the days where, like I said a minute ago, where everyone just felt leggy. Like you just feel like you've been sitting on a coach for the whole day. You pretty much had, but yeah, that weren't nice.
I might be wrong with this, but I'm sure that Mauser was about another hour and a half, 2 hours down the road.
I think so, probably,
On
yeah. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
the
It's proper deep into Cornwall,
road.
wasn't it?
Yeah, mental stuff. So you're at St Albans, and I mean, how long was you there for before moving on?
Probably about 18 months. So I think I was there a season and then maybe the start of the following season. And yeah, so that and then that's when I got my move to Harlow, and where I guess that move there was where my career in non-league really took a upward trajectory. If that makes sense.
The first season at Harlow, was that the first playoff season, or was that the season before?
No, that was the Whitham season.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it
So,
was. Yeah.
talk us through that sort of. I mean, we'll sort of that sort of season. All of a sudden, Harlow, I think the season before was struggling, and then all of a sudden, I think it was a bit like save a bit of money type thing, and we'll go for it next year, and so forth. And then some big names come in. I think yourself came in, and a few others came in as well that year. And all of a sudden, the upturn in the team was incredible. And you end up sort of going through that season. I mean, that was 3G that time, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah.
3G was there, so you're playing on that 3G surface, moving all the way forward. I mean, what was that like with being with the manager that you was with at St Albans, and then coming into somebody like Danny Chapman? What was that like?
Chalk and cheese, to
Yeah.
be honest. So I've got so much admiration for Chapo, and I still speak to him to this day every now and then. But he is completely different to my first St Albans manager. St Albans manager was young. Chapo was young at the time, but he was a lot younger. He was sort of he finished his career a little bit early. One of them sort of managers. I still think he was probably in his late 20s. What actually happened at St Albans? The manager got sacked, and our captain took the interim role and then got the job. So I think
Who was
he.
that? Was that Lee Allinson?
No, it was before then. It was
Right.
Jimmy Gray.
Right, okay.
And Graham Goals, they took over as sort of joint managers. But I think they must have been early 30s, late 20s at the time. And yeah, like just two completely different personalities, two completely different in terms of from Jimmy to Chapo, two different styles, two different ways of working. So you have an adaptation period, right, where you're used to trying to play football from goalkeeper to their goalkeeper, and then maybe you've got to all of a sudden change to being that little bit more direct, a little bit more forceful, if you like, in terms of the way you pass the ball and the way how you get it from back to front. And it did take a few weeks to realize, actually, no, I know why I'm doing it, not I'm doing it just because I'm being told to do it. But yeah, no, I loved every minute of it. I honestly did. And the squad we had were, I think that was probably a testament to Chapo as well, that he kept pretty much the same side or the same squad for the best part of 4 or 5 years.
Who was in that squad when you turned up?
So we had, I can't remember his surname, but Donny was right back.
Yeah, Donny Bernard, yeah.
That's him, Donny Bernard. Blewett was playing. Brownie was playing. Robbie Martin was there. I think Dado was there. Reedy was there. Leon was there.
Did Fabs come in that season? Was that the season
He was
after?
after me, yeah. Not by much, not by much, maybe like 5 or 6 games, something like that.
Always late, yeah.
Yeah, always, always. We always tell him 1 o'clock. Yeah, no, pretty much from that moment, it was relatively consistent. I think Stan was there at the time, Stan Magoo.
Who was in goal on that on that then?
Who was in goal? So when I joined, the how I got to Harlow was when I said a minute ago, when we won the County Cup for St Albans against Bishop Stortford, my best mate was playing in goal for Harlow at the time, but he only played a handful of games. And pretty much as soon as I left, maybe 3 or 4 weeks later, he left. As soon as I joined, sorry, he left maybe 3 or 4 weeks later. Can't actually remember who the goalkeeper was. But it was very quickly, it changed to Ed Thompson. And then I think Husey was directly after that. And then there was a couple more in between. But I can't actually remember who the goalkeeper was.
I mean that sort of scenario of playing in that first season. I mean, I always remember sort of the semi-final and the final of the, in the playoffs. And I always remember going back to what you said earlier a little bit about somebody beating somebody, et cetera, et cetera. And I always remember talking to Ray Dyer as we was at Heybridge Swifts that night and
Yeah.
seeing Jody Brown going onto the pitch before the game. And I don't know if you saw this, if you might have even been in the changing room at the time, but Jody Brown actually went out onto the pitch before that semi-final and collected Manager of the Month award
Right.
pitch before the semi-final. And I turned around to Ray Dyer and said, "Well, we're going to win this." And Ray said to me, "Like, oh, Dave, but they've beaten us three times this season, both times in the league and in the FA Cup." And I just remember that game. Because we're all behind down back at one end of it, and the players are coming out of the tunnel, and all the Harlow fans, if you I don't know if you remember this, got all round the tunnel and were smashing their hitting the trumpets and God knows what else, and there's such a noise. And speaking to Jody a few years later, he said that he reckoned his team bottled it then, or words to that effect. Do you know what I mean? From that sort of noise coming onto the pitch. But what do you remember about that? What do you remember about that day?
So, I mean, the first thing I remember is leaving my house at about 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, because it is an absolute mile from where we lived. I always remember having to. I think I left work early, or I can't remember if I was working at that point. I'm still pretty young, but I always remember leaving really early, and just I was talking to my mum and dad on the way down, and it was very much a, this is going to be a real tough game. And sort of relating back to the conversation we had earlier, it was exactly the same. They'd beaten us, like you say, 3 times that season. And I'd say quite convincingly, at least 2 of them times. And it was, I always find with them sort of fixtures and that sort of history in a season that it's very, very difficult to be the side that's beaten the team 3 times. It's very, very difficult to have that mentality that I need to go and beat them again, because subconsciously or consciously, however you deal with it, you think you can just not almost turn up, but you can have that little bit more relaxed mentality. Whereas I think we turned up and our mentality was intense. It was very much focus. We're here to do a job. We're here to be men, and we're here to get the result that we need. Don't get me wrong, until sort of 6:30, it was very much laughy and jokey. But as soon as Chapo come in and started speaking, it was very much, like I say, that's the one thing I remember. It was intense. It was very much a siege mentality from us, in the sense of it's us against the world now. Like, we need to go prove a point, because rightly or wrongly, that they've beaten us 3 times this season. And again, like I said, a couple of times was probably pretty, and at home, probably quite convincingly. So we needed to prove a point, not only to ourselves, but to, I mean, I can't remember how many fans were there that day. There's probably a couple of hundred of us. And just to sort of repay them as well, because, I mean, what a night. I mean, it was an amazing night. And yeah, I mean, I do distinctively remember Buddha almost climbing on the tunnel, banging on it, and I can't remember who had the drum. And yeah, it was almost like we was at home away. That's how it felt in the tunnel. And that I think you're probably he's probably pretty close to that in the sense of it could have been seen if I was on the other team, it could have been quite intimidating.
And it didn't feel like that sort of really intimidating atmosphere when they were coming onto the pitch. But the game goes our way. We then skip on to Witham. And then that sort of terminology which is used switches, isn't it? Because we've beaten Witham twice that year. And we go to their pitch when it was all lumpy and bumpy and dust bowl and all the rest of it. But that game was also very, not famous, but was renowned because the now chairman of Harlow Town Football Club, in Tim Salt, that was the first game that he came with me because he was, you know, bit of best mates and that. And it was the first game he ever came to. And somebody in the crowd actually threw something at him, a bottle of beer at him, straight at his camera. And he went up Garrity on that day. But that was the first game that we'd ever been, he'd ever come to. And then it
That's
sort of,
Tim's fault.
well, there you go. It's definitely his fault. Yeah. But then we go to that game, and as you say, it's completely flipped on its head because we'd beaten them twice. What was it like in in that changing room beforehand with Chapo? I mean, what was he actually saying to you guys before that game?
So it wasn't, do you know what? The chat wasn't too dissimilar. And as much as I just said a minute ago, probably subconsciously or consciously, Heybridge had taken their sort of eye off the ball, if you like, because they'd beaten us so many times. I think we subconsciously did. I don't think consciously we did because it was a very confident change room. It was a very, we just won 3-0. And we played really, really well on the Wednesday night. And we knew because of what just happened on the Wednesday night and the history between us and the and Heybridge that it was going to be a it was going to be a dog it was going to be a battle it was going to be a similar but on the other side as you just said. Yeah, I mean Chapo come in pretty much said the same thing as he did on the Wednesday night, and that was that. We went out and I personally think we just froze. I genuinely think we froze. I genuinely think that I don't think that we turned up thinking that we can just turn up kind of mentality. I genuinely don't think any of us boys are like that. I think we're too honest. I think we were too, if anything, probably too eager to win, right? But then that has a detriment effect on you, doesn't it? It can completely go the other way, and then as soon as the whistle gets. As soon as the whistle blows, it's very much a. It almost felt like all our energy just sapped out of us. And again, I don't know whether because that's whether the Wednesday night was just too intense, and the recovery period was so short. Because I think that was a Sunday, wasn't it?
I think so,
So, as much as there's probably 3 or 4 days there from something from being so high on a Wednesday night and a semi-final winning and what have you, and then all of a sudden. You've got to prepare for a final that's 3 or 4 days later. It can take a lot out of you. So, yeah, I mean that was probably one of the lowest days in my football career.
I'll be honest with you, I've just pulled it up. It's just come up on football web pages actually, like the actual team. And I'll be honest, there's at least one or maybe two names here that sort of, hey, okay, I didn't know that. But this was the side on that day. Daniel Knowles in goal. So that was the one I would never have got in a million years.
No.
Donny Bernard, yourself, Joshua Urquhart, Darren Blewett, Fabian Sims, Junior Datton, Stanley Magoo, Alex Reid, Leon Antoine, and James Smith. And the subs were Chindi McKenzie, Robbie Martin, Jonathan Glowacki, George Smith, and Ed Thompson.
There you go.
That's a good side, isn't it? When you
That
think
is a good side.
about it. But it'll be interesting in a minute when we go on to the next year just to see the difference, because I don't think there would be much difference in that team. Maybe the goalie, you know, but other than that, I don't think they'd probably maybe Donny
No.
Bernard maybe as well
I
gone, but.
think maybe Popey come in. I think Smithy was still there. I think Josh maybe left halfway through the following season. I can't remember. But yeah, no, it won't be too dissimilar.
So
Won't be.
what was that like? The game finishes, and as you say, it was probably in a, and this is no disrespect to you sitting there, probably one of the poorest performances from an Arlo team that I can remember
Yeah,
on that day. Do you know what I mean? So I mean the
100%.
massive disappointment, and then you go back into that dressing room, and then all of a sudden, then you're sort of your season's just one game's gone, and the season's over. I mean, it would have been one way or the other, but you know what I'm trying to say, the season's just gone, and it's you're really flat. And what was that actually like then, going, you know, that day, and then meeting up again, sort of, I don't know, 3 or 4 months later to try and start it all again?
Yeah, I mean, like I said a minute ago, it was probably the lowest day, the lowest I've probably ever felt in football. It just I think the overriding feeling was not regret, because I don't regret anything, right? But I think the standard we set throughout the whole season, the level we got to in terms of performance and character and fight and will and all the good stuff that you want to see from a good football team, we didn't show any of it. And I think that was the not the it probably well it did we did let the club down, right? We didn't show up to a final, and look, that happens all the time. You could watch any final across the whole world from any level. Sometimes, well, probably more than sometimes, one team doesn't turn up. They almost freeze, like they're in a rabbit in headlights kind of thing, kind of situation. And I guess that was the thought process and the sort of how you try and sum it up from a certainly when you sit in the change room when you just, I think it was 3-0 in the end, wasn't it? Trying to rack your head around what happened and how it happened, because I mean, it was probably the shock of the season, right? I think we, like you said a minute ago, we battered them both times. I think the away game was sort of 3 or 4-1 or something, maybe a bit more than that. I can't remember if it was that season or the following season. But I remember going there and we in the league game, like, we actually turned them over. To then to lose the playoff final in the what manner we did was the most. Yeah, that was the hardest thing to take, I think. And then we all had to go back to the club expecting to be in a party, and it's all somber, and everyone's trying to have a beer, but no one really wants to have a beer. And yeah, it was hard. And then I think the main thing we did, or the main thing the guys at the club did, was keep 75% of that squad together. And I think that's what got us success. I appreciate it wasn't the next year that we did either, but I think keeping that squad together and having that core group and the mentality that is set by the club and Chapo and the core of that squad actually got a success. As much as probably we failed both the first 2 years, in the grand scheme of things, in terms of our targets and what our goal was at the start of the both seasons. You look back on it, and I think it's probably the most successful period, certainly in my career, and probably most of ours, right? In terms of the amount of wins, the amount of goals conceded, the cup runs, even if you just look at the in isolated incidents, the games against Thurrock at home in the second year, I think we scored 3 goals in about 2 minutes in the second half. Like just little isolated moments like that, it just proves that actually, do you know what? We had something really, really good then.
I mean, looking at it as well, I mean, you go into that next season in, I know you just said, that's probably one of the highlights of your, the Heybridge. For me, the greatest season ever in non-league football was the next season.
Need a mark at the battle at the
It
top.
was just
Yeah.
incredible. I mean, the whole season was just mind-blowing. I mean, it was just from start to finish, it was like we'd win, they'd lose, they'd lose. It was just a crazy, crazy season.
Yeah.
Just
Yeah.
absolutely bonkers, especially even going to Thurrock. I mean, that's the one I'd like to ask you about. Going to Needham Market, on that sort of game, literally,
Second last game of the season, wasn't
it was just like it was the last but one game of the season. Going to Needham Market in front of, I think, I'd hate to think how many people are actually physically there. But you go to that game, and I'm just going to try to see if I can ping it up just to see if it tells me how many were there. But it was just a crazy thing because if they'd win, then the season was already over, so on and so on. I'm just going to pull it up now, actually, because it finishes 2-2, 2-0 down at half time, the trophy's going to Needham there and then. And then there's a substitution by the boss, and I think Reedy was injured, I think, wasn't he? And he comes on and
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Huntley comes on and scores, and then Popey scores, and then misses a sitter to win it at the end. Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, what was that day like going down? What was the atmosphere in that dressing room?
It was chaos, in all honesty. I mean, just from start to finish, you look back on it and you think, wow, like I didn't know my head from my toes all day. It was sort of an out-of-body experience moment. From being 2-0 down at half time and thinking, oh, we felt this 12 months ago at the playoff final, exactly the same feeling, albeit a little bit different because Neidermarkt were top of the league at the time, just on goal difference, or maybe a point or something. But that feeling doesn't change. You feel like you've let go of what your goal was and what have you, and yeah, it wasn't nice at all. And then, I mean, the message was sort of from Chapo, we've brought three coaches of fans. Like, almost the question was to, well, what are you doing? Like, just take the shackles off, stop being so safe, stop being so, I guess, not scared, but in a way, fearful of losing, right? And do you know what? Second half, I think, as you kind of said there, I come from 2-0 down, probably, well, should have won it at the end. And we gave a good account of ourselves in the second half. But yeah, it was just a really, really chaotic game, chaotic day. I think when we scored the first one, they probably felt, as we felt sitting in the changing room at half time, like, oh God, we can't concede another one. And it was just one of them ding dong games. And it was probably testament to both teams that in that season. And yeah, it was a crazy season, a crazy game. And towards the end, it was probably a toss of a coin. So I think the last 10 minutes, it was a bit of like a basketball game as well. But yeah, Popey, probably the wrong person at the wrong time.
What did he say in the dressing room afterwards? Did anybody rib him?
No, I
He's
don't think you
Craig Pope,
could,
I
because I
suppose. You
think it was
wouldn't rib
yeah,
him.
I think he's probably one you can't do that to. The night One of the nicest men I've ever met, but my word on a football pitch is he a warrior. Yeah, I just think probably after the game there's more of a sense of the as much as it wasn't done, because I think it was only maybe it was goal difference or a point or 2 points or something. It was something really, really close where if they drew or lost and we won, it was ours. But yeah, I just think the amount of games that both teams won that season, the amount of games that both teams lost that season was staggering. And it was probably only good as soon as we drew, it was only going to be theirs, really.
I mean, going on to literally going on to the then up to the playoff semi final at home, and of course, at that stage, we'd already lost in the final year before. We're up against probably a team that was had got something to fight for, because we were the sworn enemy to Thurrock at the time, because of things that had previously happened in earlier in the season and in the season before. So we were the sort of the big villains going into it, and probably the one game where I wanted to jump off the stand. I'll be honest with you, I think we finished about 26 points in front of them, etc. And you were talking about the other game being a crazy game. I mean, it was literally after almost it felt like after almost every single kickoff there was a goal. If it was in first half, second half,
Was it 5-3 in the end?
it finished 4-3. So
4-3.
Warren Goodhine, he scores an own goal in the first
That
minute.
was after, I was about to say, after like 30 seconds or something,
Yeah,
wasn't
he
it?
scores after that. Then Reedy gets a couple. He gets one in 17 and 22. Then Charlie Stimpson comes up and scores in 66. He then goes to extra time. And then Leslie Thompson scores in 92. Ross Wall scores 104, and Dadson scores in 106, and 901 there for an evening kickoff, and it went down by 4-3. I mean, I think that was probably the most devastating result ever, I think, that I can remember being at Arlo.
It's probably up there with the, I'd say probably for what the playoff final was, I'd say that's probably the worst one. But don't get me wrong, the Thurrock one, for all the outside noise and the game itself and sort of the ebbs and flows, like you said there, like being 1-0 down after 45 seconds or whatever it was, you don't expect that. That was hard as well. I mean, I keep saying we had such a successful couple of years, and we've got two very, very tough results in this matter of 14 days there in terms of Neidermarkt and that one. But yeah, no, Farrakh was always a good. It was always a good battle. It was always a good. It's a good rivalry, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It definitely was. And I mean, looking at it as well, I mean, the team, when we were talking about the team, maybe not changing too much, you had Andy Walker in goal, Craig Pope, yourself, Joshua Urquhart, Warren Goodhine, Fabian Sims, Jared Small, David Cowley, who I think gets a bad rap from Arlo fans, myself personally, but other people might disagree. Alex Reid, Leon Antoine, Junior Dadson. And then one of my favourite players that never played too much for the club, but he's got to be up there for me as one of my favourites of all time. He's Daniel Matosuka. I thought he was one of the nicest guys. And I always remember after that game in the semi-final, I was standing in the tunnel as you were coming off, and the lad was in tears. He was only a young lad at the time, and he was in
Yeah, I
tears.
think he was
He
only
walked.
17, 18. He was on loan from Southend, wasn't he?
Southend. And he was in tears, and he walked up to me. I'm sorry, Dave. He said, "I've let you down." And that was what he said to me as he walked past me and went something to the dressing room. Jamie Guy, Billy Jones, Robbie Martin, and Ed Thompson.
Yeah, it's a side, isn't it? Again, he. Chap, I knew how to put a team together.
As you said, not many changes,
No.
not many changes at all from that. But so you've had then two really disastrous seasons. How it's finished?
Yeah.
How do you pick yourself up for the one that finally got you success?
I guess it's a it's probably part of the mentality of the boys, right? It's sort of just keep going, keep trying to do the right things. It was very Chapo was very, very clear in his instructions. Do the basics well, the fundamentals that get you results, do them consistently to the best of your ability, and our technical ability will come through. I mean, you name some of them players there, like some of them are proper footballers. They're not sort of what you would call old school sort of real men warrior type personalities. They were real technical, real gifted footballers, but with a blend of people that wanted to run through a brick wall. And I think yeah, that was the main thing I said a minute ago. Keeping that core together, having that mentality, having the I think we said it probably five or six times every season. No one likes Arlo. For some reason, every club, I don't know whether it was jealousy, I don't know whether it was people being envious, I don't know whether it was because we were successful. If you look at the grand scheme of things, we were. And I appreciate again, we've lost two semi-finals and missed out on a league by a point or whatever it was at the end. Goal difference, we scored 110 goals, 120 goals in that season, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I don't know whether it's all that accumulated together that was why people don't like us, but I think we've thrived on that. And I think I think that as a club and as a team, people sort of got a spring in their step from that. And again, that's probably why everyone wanted to come back. That's probably why everyone stayed together because we were mates as well. Yeah, there's always going to be changes. That's non-league football. Like you're going to miss out on a couple. People are going to move on for an extra whatever. They're going to go up a league. They're going to go to their mate's team, whatever it may be. Right? There's obviously loads and loads of different examples of why people would leave. But I think it's testament to the club, testament to the team and the and Chapo and his team that we kept probably seven, maybe six, seven, eight of the same team that played or the squad that played the first year.
Yeah, the season that you go, you do finally go up. I mean, is there any games in that league games, cup games? Because we had a really good cup run that season as well. Is there any games that stick in your mind? I mean, the one I'll be honest with you, the one that sticks in my mind is going to Bath and beating Bath at Bath. I mean, that was probably one of the best nights, full stop. Do you know what I mean? But I mean, was there any sort of games in there for you?
You know what? I think we went because Sudbury won the league that year, didn't they? Am I right in saying that?
We beat
So,
them 1-0 in the last game of the season, didn't we?
yeah, I think it was. Do you know what? I remember that game, and I remember the because we had to give them a guard of honour because they'd already won the league. And I remember that. I remember standing there on the pitch, going like just being really sort of driven and motivated, and having the thought of we shouldn't be doing this. not in a horrible way, because they've deserved it, but in a way of they should be doing this to us kind of mentality. And I think most of us had that, and maybe doing that gave us that little edge going into Cray and the final, to try and get over the line. Because I think people say third time lucky or whatever. I don't. You create your own luck, and I think that was probably the moment that we all kind of realized that this needs to be our year. And there's a difference between it wanting to be your year and sort of going and grabbing it, isn't there?
And I'll be honest as well. I mean, I looked at that as well and thought to myself that the time we, when we did get up, that was probably the toughest semi-final and the toughest final. Do you know what I mean? But when you look at the, the games that we had in the semi-finals, Witham, Heybridge, and then Thurrock, and it would have been, it would have been Brentwood as such or whatever it might have been, whoever it would have been in the final. That sort of wasn't as tough as looking at, Cray Wanderers, and then Hornchurch. With Tony Russell's, Cray and stuff. It was just that sort of thing where you thought, Struth, this is, I don't fancy us here. Do you know, because this is going to be tough.
I mean, if you look at the first 2 years, there was probably, well, certainly the second year, there was obviously two teams that just ran away with it, with us and Needham. The rest were, I mean, I think Thurrock beat us and they just scraped in the playoffs from memory. The first year, similar sort of story. I can't remember who won the league that year, but I do remember them just running away. They'd won it maybe by a month.
I think it was
So.
VCD, I think, on Mark,
But
but
yeah, they did. Yeah, that they won it at Cantor. They're a really, really good side. Played good football, and in the playoffs, you had teams that you're always going to get teams that are going to give you good games. But there was none really that you thought, "Oh, we're really, really up against this." Whereas the season we went up, we had Cray. We had two. I can't remember the results in the season, but neither of them were easy games. And Hornchurch with the side they had, never going to give you an easy game. So I completely agree. And I think the other ones were maybe Thurrock and Brentwood in the other semi-finals. The other places, I appreciate. I mean, I think Thurrock just missed out on playoffs. But yeah, it was a it, that league that year was a lot closer.
I mean, I've just pulled up the team in the semi-final. It won't give me the final for some reason. It only goes up to April football web pages. I don't know why, but anyway, I mean this sort of team. I mean, I suppose I'd challenge any Harlow fan that watches this, to tell me if there's been, ever been a better team, because this is quite a team to say the least. David Hughes in goal, Craig Pope, yourself, Sam West, Ibrahim Asonko, Fabian Sims, Jared Small, Cyrus Gordon, Alex Reid, Piers Wickson, Junior Dadson, and on the bench, Joe Benjamin, Leon Antoine, Mario Notto, Brian Milau, and Jack Ryan.
Yeah, it's a side, isn't it? That's a squad. That's a yeah. Yes, yeah, the people are going to have their own opinions, right? But I think there's definitely an argument for that being one of the better sides that the club have ever produced. I think that's a real strong, there's a balance there as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, what was that actually like then, going into the final to play, Hornchurch in the final? I mean, what was that actually like going into that?
I was tired. I tell you that I did not sleep the night before. I don't know whether I think you're always a little bit more nervous than being apprehensive before a final anyway. But given the history and the even the rivalry with Hornchurch, we had a little bit of battles with it, a few battles with them as well. And I don't think the fans liked each other. And being at home as well, and just everything behind it, I just think it led to where I said. When we turned up to Witham and the confidence was there, but maybe it overbalanced to maybe a bit of naivety. I think we was at an age and a maturity in that squad where I think, I don't know, we could probably play the team from the league above and I think we would have beaten them. It was that type of performance, that type of squad as well. I think, yeah, you could put anyone in front of us. They could have had 13 on the pitch. I think we probably still would have beaten them.
And it was some days. I mean, goals from Piers Wickson, yourself, and an own goal as well, sort of made it a 3-1 victory. And I'm just trying to see if, yeah, here we go. So the final team was David Hughes, Craig Pope, Lane Edie, Sam West, Ibrahima Sonko, Jared Small, Junior Dadson, Cyrus Gordon, Fabian Sims, Piers Wixon, and Alex Reid. And on the bench, it's basically, I think, the same team. Joe Benjamin, Leon Antoine, Mario Nottot, Ryan, and Jack Ryan. So what was it like scoring in the playoff final on them?
Personally, I think that's probably one of the best moments of my career. From a purely personal point of view, it was the probably a little bit of relief as well. Proud. I think that made it 3-1, and that killed the game completely. There's a picture of me running over to celebrate, and you could just see the sort of all the Hornchurch players on their haunches. They're all sort of all the wind had been sucked out of them, kind of thing. And I think you just knew at that point. And then it became a party atmosphere, didn't it? It became very, very much a sort of a, all you could hear was Harlow, and pretty much all you could hear all game was Harlow, but even more so at that point. And yeah, I mean, like I say, from a personal point of view, it was just sheer elation.
I mean, this is the write-up that I've just put up in front of me. Harlow's midfield continued to snuff out the Hornchurch attackers, and with 69 minutes on the clock, the game was effectively over. Lane Edie gathered a loose ball in the middle of the field, and after striding forward, unleashed a 30-yard shot that dipped underneath the bar to the delight of a huge crowd.
Sums it up pretty well, doesn't it?
I was waiting for a sensational strike, but he didn't put that in there. I don't know what that was all about, but yeah. I mean, what was that? The atmosphere though afterwards was unbelievable, wasn't it?
It was mental. Probably one of the best days, nights, weekends that I think we probably all had as a group. It went on till late, put it that way. Just from everything, from running the big, I can't remember who had it, but me and Mario took the biggest flag I've ever held in my life, ran around the pitch for about 5 minutes, and then gave it back. And then someone took Buddha's scarf and hat and shoes and what have you, and had him running around after. It was just chaos, just loads of weird stuff just happening that you just wouldn't. You just wouldn't see it on a normal day, and look, why not? Celebrate it. I mean, what a day.
So I mean that season finishes, you go up into league. I mean that how much longer was you at Harlow for before moving on?
I was there the following season. I left at the end of the first season in the Prem.
So what was that like moving on from Harlow? I mean, when you know, for people who don't know, where did you move on to?
Went back to St Albans, who were Conference South, pushing for their ambition was to win the league, get the playoffs or whatever, and go up to the National League. Whenever I have this conversation with people, I don't really know how to explain how I felt. I don't regret it, because I was trying to progress my career, but at the same time, I just think it was probably the right move at the wrong time. So I don't know whether that was the fantasy of going back to St Albans, because I played for them before, and I knew all the backroom staff, etc. Sort of new manager and a new team, but I knew pretty much everyone else at the club. Or it was just the fact that there's that little bit, there still is that little bit of me that almost unfinished business. I still want it. There's a couple of goals of mine that I've always wanted to do, and with Harlow, I never really got to achieve them. But yeah, I don't know whether it was the wrong club at the right time, or the right club at the wrong time, if that makes sense. I don't know. But there's a it did, though, it didn't work out, right? I was there maybe 18 months, 2 years. And it just there was a lot going on in life at that time, as well, which probably didn't help, from a personal point of view. And yeah, I just think it was probably overshadowed, and it probably affected football a little bit. Whereas I don't know whether that would have happened with Chapo and Harlow, because Like I said, right at the start, the relationship I've got with Chapo is almost like a football dad to me. So he took me under his wing when I was probably 18 or 19 at the time, and I played every minute I could under him. So the respect and the sort of the relationship I had with him is completely different to someone that I'd never met. So I don't know what it was, but I think it was the right decision to go at that point. But again, like I said, I don't know whether it was the right club or the right people, the right infrastructure, etc.
So from there then, I mean, you were at St Albans. I mean, whereabouts did you moved on, and did you go to Hitchin as well?
Did yeah. So I was at St Albans, like I said, a couple of years. I broke my leg in the second season, and then ended up at Hitchin, just trying to get games and that sort of stuff. And then I was at Hitchin maybe, I think in total, probably 4 years, with a stint back at Harlow in the middle. I mean, Hitchin's, I hold Hitchin a similar level to Harlow, not quite as high, but everyone in it, the Berkey, the manager, done wonders for me. He's again one of the nicest blokes you'll ever meet, and he's very honest, very true, very straight. Very, very good manager. But so I love my time at Hitchin as well. And I ended up going back to when Chapo got he because he left for a little bit, didn't he?
Left for a bit, yeah.
Yeah, and then when he came back, he said, "Do you want to come back in?" And like I said a minute ago, I can't really say no to that. So I went back in for sort of 18 months, and then obviously the issues with the pitch and what have you, and then ended up back at Hitchin again, and then here I am, pretty much.
So then from Hitchin into, did you have some time away before going to Welling, or?
Very, very briefly, I went to Potters Bar at the start of this season. Again, probably the right reasons in terms of the level, in terms of the type of club and the type of person I want to play for. Just didn't work out. It just really didn't work out. I've had many chat with Weathers about this, but he knows. But it's difficult. After about 6, 7 weeks, it was quite apparent that wasn't going to work, and sort of just mutually agreed that it's probably not going to work. It's not going to be right for me. It's not going to be right for you. So I left, and then didn't know really what to do. I genuinely didn't have a clue. But thankfully, I've got a few good friends that believe in me, and I've got a few good friends that are managers of football clubs and still think that I've got a bit of talent and can do a very good job for them. And one of them was Weathers. So again, like I said right at the start, I've known him for the best part of maybe, I don't know, what, 10 years maybe a bit more. And I've obviously known Josh, and you've just named him in three of the sides that I've played in. I was with him at St Albans when I was first there as well, before I come to Harlow. So I've known him even longer. He's the assistant manager. A couple of the boys I've played with previously as well throughout my career, and I've known them for a long time. And yeah, it was quite an easy decision in the end. So I'm glad I did sort of stick with it, because there was a time where I thought, do I need sort of the stress? Not the stress, that's the wrong way of putting it, but do I need the commitment, if you like, of 4 hours on a Tuesday and Thursday, and sort of the best part of a day on a Saturday? Do I need that every week when I've got a family? And but I think you think like that when something doesn't quite work out for you, in the way that Potter's Bar did. You've got to maybe have like a little bit of a reality check almost. And like I said a minute ago, luckily I've got good people around me. I've got very, very supportive family. My wife is probably my biggest fan, other than my little one. My mum and dad, talk to them till the cows come home about football, about my career and whatever. It was just, like I said a minute ago, it's just a bit of a reality check that I needed maybe. And it was probably a harsh reality that I do still really enjoy football. I do love it. And I needed to carry on, basically.
I suppose one final question, because I'd get told off if I didn't by people and comments and stuff like that. You get a phone call at the end of the season, and I'll say the end of the season because it's he's a friend of mine as well. Get a call at the end of the season, and it's a certain chap on the other end of the phone. Do you see yourself ever going back there?
Look, I think that's a difficult one to give you a very, very straight answer to. I will always talk to Chapo. I will always listen to what he's got to say. I think there's probably a couple of, not restrictions, I think that's the wrong word, but a couple of stipulations that I would want. Just being at my age and just location and that sort of stuff. But look, I would always welcome a conversation with Chapo. I'd never hide from that. But again, like I said, it has to be the right league in terms of I just can't go into Essex every other week. It just wouldn't work well with family and that sort of stuff. But yeah, I wouldn't turn it down without answering the phone, put it that way.
Listen, I've got no connection to Arlo anymore, so it was just a question because I knew people would ask me that. But I mean, as I say, literally final question, Lang, because I know you're a busy man, but I mean, if you could just pick one highlight from your career so far, I mean, what would be that? Would it be a goal you scored, a game you played in? I mean, what would be the highlight of Lane Edie's football career so far?
There's so many, right? I think probably if we're going to put one out that stands above the rest, it's got to be the playoff final win. But there's debuts, there's reaching 200 games for Harlow, there's captain for the first time, there's being in a senior side at 15 years old. There's kicking a first football at four. Do you know what I mean? There's loads that I could go through. Playing football in the garden, the old man, that sort of stuff. But I think probably the playoff final win with a goal, and the type of goal that I scored was probably, it's got to be up there. It's got to be one or two at least.
And I thought you was going to say having your goal on Soccer AM. Yeah, I like your career.
Again, another very that pops up every now and then. I get sent it every now and then. On my birthday, one of my pals always posts it, just to remind me. Yeah, a surreal moment, really, really weird, but one I'm very, very thankful for.
And you gave me the perfect angle to film it from as well. And again, that was just funny because again, it was just filmed, and someone said, "Oh, sent that they do goals," and I just sent it to Soccer AM just off the off chance to see. And it wasn't until I very rarely watch it, very, very rarely
Yeah.
watch it. You know, I mean, and it was not something I used to watch on a Saturday morning, and for some reason, I'd recorded something else, and it had overlapped. And literally right at the end of the overlap was them sitting on the couch talking about it. And she goes, "Oh, Lane Edie." And then the goal comes up on there. And funny,
Yeah.
I've actually still got it on my Sky Q box.
Have
It's
you?
there.
I've got it on my phone. Yeah. Like I say, it gets sent to me every now and then. And again, it's just surreal. Like you wouldn't think, Lane Edie from a non-league football club scoring a goal. Don't be wrong. It's probably one of my be probably the best goal I've ever scored. But he's on even in like the Welling players chat. It gets sent. Weathers puts it in every now and then. It's just like what. It's just surreal. The way it's still got legs and the way it keeps going is it's one moment to treasure, put it that way.
He said to me the other day, he's still waiting for you to do one for him.
Yeah. Tell him
I
to sort the picture and I might be able to.
was going to say, he's going to say, yeah. But listen, lad, it's been fantastic talking to you for the last hour or so. Stay on because I've got something to ask you. But literally, it's been fantastic talking to Lane today. We'll be back with another one in the episode, sorry, in the series, should I say, of My Life in Football Season 4. Until then, thank you for watching. And from me and Lane, good night.